I really wanted to make a record that would be out there for a long time, and I feel really proud about it because we were going into the 90s and I wanted to have a great record for the 90s.
Everything I do, I do it for you.
Again, I'm into this for music. I'm not sure about, I don't know, it's a fickle world about whether you're credible or not, and at the end of the day, if you feel comfortable making music because it's what inspires you, then that's what you should do. It's not about trying to garner up an image. It's about garnering up. It's about making music.
The only thing that looks good on me is you.
Hi, this is Brian Adams in the studio, and so far, so good.
In part one of Brian Adams' anthology, we documented how the 1984 Reckless album was an international sensation. For the remainder of the 80s decade, Brian Adams seemed to be everywhere. From the stage at Live Aid in Philadelphia, to the Prince's Trust concerts in London, to the Berlin Wall as Roger Waters' special guest performing The Wall in 1990. Brian reinvested some of his reckless earnings into a creative space to make the follow-up album in 1987.
I built a recording studio in Vancouver. I actually started building it back in the 80s. And I don't know if you remember the album Into the Fire, but that album was sort of the beginning of my collection of studio equipment. And from there, just mushroomed and mushroomed and mushroomed. And to the point where I needed to get a place to put some of the stuff I'd collected. Because I started collecting old microphones. I started collecting old compressors and stuff that, you know, from the 50s and 60s. And eventually got such a crazy amount of stuff that I decided to build a recording studio. And now it sits in the sort of old dockland area of warehouse area of Vancouver.
Where do you live now?
I've been living in London.
How is living in London affecting your music, the new music that you write?
Well, I don't know that it really has. I spent 8 months living in Jamaica. I've been living in France for a while. And I just sort of, wherever I go, I sort of bring a guitar along. I mean, this Christmas I went back down to Jamaica and I spent the holidays there and spent most of the time there just writing songs. So, wherever I lay my hat, it's my home. When I was with my folks growing up, we traveled around the world quite a bit. My father was a diplomat, and so we traveled pretty extensively around Europe and the Middle East. So I'm a global nomad, Beard. That's my gig, man.
Well, you knew it was a small world before the rest of us did. You knew that it was world music.
It's not a small world, man. It's a big ass world. Okay. It's big. It's a lot. It's hard to cover it. You know. Sometimes I wish there was two of me so we could do two things at once. But it's kind of hard to do that.
Well, there's some doctor that's working on it right now.
I'm up for it.
It's a strange thing about the multi-platinum success, like that of the Reckless album. It can make any follow-up, such as the Into the Fire album in 1987, appear to be a letdown instead of the million seller that it actually was. After the relatively lukewarm reception to Into the Fire, Brian Adams reevaluated his creative approach for the next album, late 91's Waking Up the Neighbors, which we discussed in front of a live studio audience.
Initially, who were you collaborating with and why? What were you going for initially?
Well, we started out doing the same thing as we normally do, which is write 10 songs and go in the studio. And then it turned into 15 songs. And then we tried some different producers, different engineers, and ended up working with Mutt Lang on the album, and it was about a year and a half of just trying things and experimenting before we actually came down with a formula for the record.
Now, a year and a half in what you would call pre-production, was that frustrating at all?
No, it was actually quite exciting. There was a lot of things we tried and tried a bunch of studios, spent way too much money in studio time, and yeah, I guess a few good dinners as well.
A few good dinners, yeah, I'll bet.
But basically, it was pretty trial and error for the first little while, because I really wanted to make a record that would be out there for a long time, and I feel really proud about it, because we were going into the 90s, and I wanted to have a great record for the 90s.
Can't Stop This Thing We Started, first heard on 1991's Waking Up the Neighbors, now on the Brian Adams Anthology.
What were you going for? Obviously, you had either a sound, a plan, a feel, something that made you experiment for a year and a half before you even felt that you were on the right musical path.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of songs recorded, and I mean, I think you have to follow your instinct on music all the time. You always have to feel really good about your record before you release it. I've always felt that way at the end of a mix or at the end of recording 10 or 15 songs. But in the first year, I never felt that we'd actually put a record together. So the thing to do was to keep trying. And once I met Mutt, I think things became more focused, and he was able to help me arrange and write songs that were, you know, going to be what is this album. And a lot of the year and a half that I spent with other people writing and recording, we honed in on a few of those ideas, rewrote them, rearranged them, and they are, you know, songs like Another Tonight, Do I Have to Say the Words, House Arrest, and those songs are sort of a conglomeration of the first year and what was to be the last year of recording.
Now, Brian, a couple of times, just in giving us the background behind Waking Up the Neighbors, the album, you've mentioned Mutt. Okay. What are Mutt Lange's credentials and reputation as a producer? Why Mutt Lange to help you get that sound that was elusive for a year and a half?
Well, I think one thing I noticed about all the records he's made with, with the Cars or AC/DC or with Foreigner was the vocals sounded great. And once I started working with Mutt, I realized that Mutt, in fact, is a singer himself. So to be able to work with someone that can sing is quite a good thing for a singer, because it pushes you to do better. And that's exactly what happened.
Put on your best dress, darling. Can't you see the time is right? There will never be another tonight. Hey! Come on! You got your motor running, and I got my engines on. Say the word and down and we'll be gone. I said the world is waiting.
From the album Waking Up the Neighbors, that's Bryan Adams with There Will Never Be Another Tonight, now included on Anthology. The combination of international stardom and relative youth made for some heady times for Bryan Adams in the early 90s, but through the rocket ride of success, he has remained grounded by a tight-knit band of musicians led by guitarist Keith Scott.
Tell me about your relationship with Keith and why it's lasted. Obviously, there's got to be even more than a musical bond here.
Well, we met in Toronto in 1976, and we were sort of in rival bands at the time, and we went and had a cup of tea, and we had a talk about music, and a couple of years later, when I was putting my album together and my first sort of touring band, I called him, and he came out with me, and the only way I can really describe what it's like to have sort of a friend, a brother, if you like, to have working with you for such a long time, is the other night we were talking about going on tour again, and I was like, oh, going on tour. I was just dreading the idea of going out again. And I looked at the sort of, you know, 2 or 3 month schedule on it. And then Keith walked in the room, and I thought to myself, you know, that's the reason why I go. I said, Keith, you know, man, when I see you, now I want to go out. I said, until you walked in the room, I was ready to go home. So, you know, there's a reason why we still play together as a band. The whole band I have has been together for a long time. And, you know, we don't have a name for the band like the Heartbreakers or the E Street Band or something like that. Maybe we should be called the Dudes of Leisure. But we've been together a long time. And that, you know, Keith isn't the only guy. Dave Taylor plays bass with me. He's been a long time. Mickey Curry plays drums with me a long time. Tommy Mandel, and who plays keyboards. You know, we've all been together. And I've been quite loyal to a lot of people in my business, whether it's Bob Clearmountain, who does their mixing, or the songwriters I've worked with. You know, I like the idea
of staying. Personal manager.
My personal manager, who we've been together since I was 18. So, you know, you know, it's about the brotherhood. It's not about sort of flitting and flattening around all over the place. You know, we just, you know, I'm comfortable with the people I met, and I stick with them.
Look into my eyes.
Sacrifice. Don't tell me it's not worth fighting. You know it's true. Everything I do. Oh, I do it for you.
That song was initially on the 1991 Bryan Adams' Waking Up the Neighbors release and the Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves film soundtrack. Nominated for an Academy Award, it went on to be the biggest-selling single in A&M Records label history. But next, Bryan reveals that it started out as a B-side. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with Bryan Adams for his definitive career-spanning double CD best, Anthology Part 2.
Hi, this is Bryan Adams. You're in the studio with myself and Redbeard.
I continued our talk with Bryan about his biggest-selling album worldwide, 1991's Waking Up the Neighbors, in front of a live studio audience.
How did the protracted time that it took to make the album affect the sheer quantity of music on the CD?
Well, it was once we got focused on what we were doing, it was we honed in on 10 songs, and we worked pretty much on those 10 songs for a while, and then we wrote two more. And we worked on 12 songs for a while, and then we had about 6 or 8 weeks of time where we were just waiting to work with Bob Clearmountain, who was going to mix the record, and we decided we would record some B-sides, which ended up being Hey Honey, I'm Packing You In, and
some B-side,
Everything I Do It For You, and one other track, which I can't remember now. Everything I Do was recorded for the film, obviously, and at the time when we recorded that song, I'm going to beat you to the question.
Okay.
But we didn't really know what to think about the song, and we thought it was a good track, but whether we thought it would be as big as it was really...
No one would have ever predicted
that.
I'm curious about why you didn't do, like Steve Miller did back in 76, 77. He recorded ostensibly two albums. He did Fly Like an Eagle, and he did Book of Dreams, all at the same time, and he released one. And then a year and a half down, he released two. I'm sure somebody at your record company is like,
maybe I should work with Steve.
Bryan, why are you shooting 75 minutes on this album? Anybody else, Bryan, would have split it up into two albums. And, you know, for commercial reasons, why did you put all 75 minutes is the limitations of the technology of a CD?
Well, I think, first of all, it's been a long time since I made a record. And I thought it'd be good to have a full CD of music. And plus, I think that, you know, times have changed now. I think people, because things are so expensive, it's nice to have a record with lots of music. And I don't know.
Amen.
There was some arguments of whether or not it was going to be a good idea because it's almost too much stuff to listen to. It's 75
minutes. We have some
dissenters out there in your live audience.
You know, there was a lot of debate about whether it was too much or not. And
no such thing.
We recorded 15 songs that we liked. Let's put them all out. Because by the time we record another record, those songs would probably be from a different time and things would have changed. And so why wait? Let's put them all out now.
As I lie awake beside you.
Big hit for Brian Adams in 1992 from the Waking Up the Neighbors album. It's been included as one of 36 songs on Anthology, covering his career to date. Brian returns to tell how he reinvented his sound by unplugging in the mid-90s. And then Brian brings us up to date. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Brian Adams for Anthology Part 2.
Hi, this is Brian Adams. You're in the studio with myself and Redbeard.
Many of the biggest names in rock felt almost obliged to do MTV's Unplugged series, but Brian Adams' 1997 performance and subsequent release was actually one of the more memorable ones.
We had already put out a greatest hits record, but I didn't want to repeat that again, and with most of my records, I don't want to repeat myself, so stylistically, I wanted to make it different, and perhaps even to push the MTV boundary a bit, and bring in musicians and arrangements that perhaps you wouldn't ordinarily hear on MTV. It was a chance really to sort of reinvent things and to really hang your, well, I can't really say it, but you know, to hang yourself out in the line. You know, there's a song like on the album called I'm Ready, which I wrote when I was 18, and that song was recorded on Cuts Like a Knife. It was recorded a few years after I wrote it, and we reinvented that quite severely for this record, and I'm actually very proud of that arrangement. I think it's a real jewel on the album.
It's one of my favorite rockers that you did originally, but it gets totally transformed.
Yeah, it gets completely transformed, and it's got a Celtic sort of vibe, and it's really quite it's got a lonesome sound to it now, which I like. But see, that song never got a chance before. I mean, people like yourself might have played it, but it never got heard, and so what this Unplugged allows you to do is to take a chance and reinvent it, and that's exactly what we did. We reinvented it
with the Irish Pipes of Davy Spillane.
I'd like to see you, thought I'd let you know. I wanna be with you every day. I got a feeling it's beginning to grow. There's only one thing I can say. I'm ready to love you. I'm ready to hold you. I'm ready. I'm gonna be. You left me a long note when you left me here. You told me that love was hard to find. Maybe it's easy, and I'll make it clear. There's only one thing on my mind. I'm ready to love you. I'm ready to hold you. Baby, I'm ready. To hold you. to love you.
With the Irish pipes of Davy Spillane and the orchestral arrangement of the late Michael Kamen, you must see Brian Adams and his band performing this on the DVD recorded at Slane Castle in Ireland in the year 2000. It is simply stunning. Thanks, Bri. He told us in part one, in the studio, that he started writing songs at the tender age of 15. So I asked Brian if there was any particular time or place that inspired him to write a song.
Oh, the oddest times. I mean, sometimes I'd be at a football match and you know, I'll think of something and I have to scramble around for a piece of paper. And, you know, if you're traveling in a car and you're thinking of something, you know, you've got to do the same thing. But generally, if I'm thinking of words, I just put them on whatever's in my pocket. And then later on, I put them in a book or on my computer or something.
Have you ever remembered that you had some kind of inspiration for a lyric or a song or something and misplaced any of those?
You know, I don't want to think about that, Redbeard. I'm sure there's been times where I've lost a scrap of paper. But I can recall on my album, On 18 Till I Die, that I'd written a song title down from just something I said to somebody one night. And I said, you know, the only thing that looks good on me is you. So it's like a bad chat up line. And I wrote it down. I thought that was quite funny. And then, you know, 2 years later, it became a song. So I tend to try to keep track of things that I say, because sometimes I just blurt out something. Oh, that could be a song title. I better write that down.
You know, your dry cleaner had a hit a few years back. Imagine that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly.
That's Brian Adams.
Well, I don't look good in no Armani suits, no Gucci shoes or designer boots. I've tried the latest lines from A to Z, but there's just one thing that looks good on me. The only thing I want, the only thing I need, the only thing I choose, yeah, the only thing that looks good on me is you.
That's Brian Adams from the 1996 album 18 Till I Die, now included on Anthology, with The Only Thing That Looks Good on Me Is You. One of the most frustrating aspects of the music business to me over the last 35 years has been the fickle cannibalization of the most successful musicians by certain gatekeepers in the media, such as music critics and radio programmers. With superstar rockers from Paul McCartney, Elton John, and Rod Stewart, to Billy Joel, Sting, and now Brian Adams, no matter how they rock to the contrary, a hit ballad will inevitably raise up with these self-appointed arbiters of rock and roll the dreaded C word, credibility. Here's Brian Adams.
Well, I don't really know about credibility. I just know about music, and this is about music. And so when someone calls me up and says, hey, you know, do you fancy coming out and singing? You know, it could be Tina Turner, or it could be Bonnie Raitt, or it could be Barbara Streisand, or it could be, I don't know. If it seems like something that would be musically challenging, I'm normally quite interested in it. And, you know, I've had some pretty high moments in my life singing with people. And, you know, one of my highest moments was singing with Smokey Robinson at the Apollo Theater back a few years ago. It wasn't a record, but it was a TV show. And I suppose, you know, if you can walk into a world that is unfamiliar and make it seem like your own for a moment, then I think you've accomplished something. And I'm into this for music. I'm not sure about, I don't know, it's a fickle world about whether you're credible or not. And at the end of the day, if you feel comfortable making music because it's what inspires you, then that's what you should do. It's not about trying to garner up an image. It's about garnering up. It's about making music. I mean, I did this thing a few years ago, which was madness. I went and sang with an opera singer called Luciano Pavarotti, mm-hmm. and he has this show every year. I mean, Eric Clapton was on it last year, and U2 was on it before that. And you know, I stepped on stage and sang in Italian on live television, but it's only because I was challenged by the idea of it. And life is about creating yourself little challenges. Otherwise, things can get kind of dull. And I brought my dad along with me, and we had a fantastic time in Italy, and we sang, and we ate great pasta, and we had a great time. And it's one of the most memorable moments of my life. But it's, again, the reason what was great about it was it was music. It was about making music.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Then he created the waters and the land. And then he created man. But man degenerated and descended into the black hole of making bad music. So a darkness fell all around. Only he could know of the storm that was coming, the hurricane that was brewing. Yes, there was something wrong, something missing. There was no rock music. So he sent an angel, and out of the mist, that angel came. He wore boots, blue jeans, and a baseball cap. He had a big old smile like a welcome mat. How cool is that? Then all the world went silent and they looked up because they all wanted to hear what he had to say. And after a moment's silence, he said,
"Let there be guitar! Drums!
Played a gig in Egypt. We played in front of the pyramids, and we did a concert in front of the Sphinx. And you know, I had to pinch myself. I turn around and look at Mickey Curry, my drummer, and right behind him was the Sphinx. It's just like you couldn't ask for a better setting. So I mean, those kind of things, and you know, I'll never forget them. There, we've been really lucky that you know the music that we've made over the last you know umpteen decades has you know. Has transcended beyond, you know, way beyond any borders I would have ever expected, you know, certainly from beyond my basement. And, you know, we can play practically anywhere. There's not a country in the world I can't go to and do a concert. I suppose the most difficult times were, you know, were the beginnings, but they were also kind of great times too, because when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. Like I was saying to you earlier, Redbeard, you know, you already know the answer is no. So you just got to go for the yes. You know, struggling to get people to recognize and support and believe. And it was work. And, you know, you go to extreme lengths to, and way beyond what things you'd ever expect to do for, you know, to just to get the message across. And it's been a fascinating trip. I mean, and it's not over. I'm so incredibly grateful for the, you know, times I've had. And, you know, I often say to friends, you know, hey, well, if it all ended tomorrow, it's been great, you know. But it doesn't seem to be ending, and there's more music being made. You know, there's always something new around the corner.
A song come in and out of focus depending on the instrumentation used or the tempo set?
How do you mean?
Well, let me give you an example. When I first got a hold of the album Get Up, I sat down, I listened to it from beginning to end, and I marked the songs that really, upon first listen, really jumped off the record to me, and I really thought, you know, had a great potential. Then I got to the acoustic songs, just you and acoustic guitar, that close out the last, four tracks on Get Up. And there's one on there called Don't Even Try. And I just go, wow. And I wrote down, here's my notes that I actually wrote on the CD. Very Lennon rubber soul.
So,
and here's the thing, though, Bri. Going through the full arrangements, I didn't necessarily pick Don't Even Try as one of my initial favorites. It wasn't until I heard the stripped down voice and guitar on Don't Even Try that I, quote unquote, got it. And I reassessed everything on the whole album, and I thought, man, these songs are some of the best things he's ever written.
You know, Redbeard is really frustrating because I love this album so much. I really think it's one of the best things I've ever done. And I don't know what to do with it. And that's why I wrote to you, because no one had contacted you from the record company or anything. And I thought, I know Redbeard, I'm just going to write to you. And
I'm glad you did, buddy.
And I wanted you to hear it because I just knew that you'd appreciate it being a rock, being the rocker that you are. So I'm just kind of reaching out to all my contacts that I've had over the years to say, hey, check this out, guys, because I think it's my best work.
Some more songs on Get Up. That's Rock and Roll and Brand New Day. Two wonderful songs, and they're both fully realized in the songwriting, in the performance, and the arrangement. What I want to know is, how do you, at, you know, 50-something, with, you know, a daddy twice over, a veteran now of the music business, how do you infuse That's Rock and Roll and Brand New Day with a vitality, an exuberance that has little to do with chronological age, but rather being young at heart? How do you do that?
I think you just answered the question. I just think you answered the question. It's you know, I have the same exuberance and enthusiasm for writing music now as I ever have. You know, I don't know if I write the same songs as I used to write, but I think these stand up, and the true test of it is playing it live. These songs feel like they've been in the set already for a long time. I'm so excited to be back on tour with it, because we just finished playing in Europe. We just did the first sort of month of shows, and I didn't want to go home, you know. I just wanted to carry on, because it was so good. I'm really excited to bring it back to America, and that's what I do. That's what I know what to do. I know how to go and deliver a show. So that's what I'm going to be doing here for probably the next. I think I'm going to try and work this record for a couple of years until, like, everyone hears it.
They said time is a healer. Time will take your pain away. They said love is a teacher. Teach you to get on your knees and pray. I got nothing but time.
This is Ren Beard in the studio, thanking my guest, Brian Adams. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.